senses than just the five cents.
We do. I think we're trained out of them. I think when we're born, we have great sensitivity. And if you see children, you could see them seeing things that we don't see. But we don't have access to it as adults because of our conditioning. We have to make room. Coming up, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. And we played a piece called Hope. I don't see the name of the person who created that song. But now we're going to hear Sinead O'Connor, Just Like You Said It Would Be. And we want to wish you a good evening. Stay tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org.
This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, yes, the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, Kaleidocast, well, it's actually some wonderful people. We'll be talking about them after the dead person's week. Stay tuned. Okay, stand by while I figure out why this isn't audible to me. Maybe it is to you, but I am not hearing Dan Person's review, so we're going to try that again. Trying another review to see if that will work. Okay. And from that came the Fire Sign Theater. And their first album was Waiting for the Electrician or Someone Like Him. Their second album was, I forgot the proper title, but the best known part of it, of course, was Nick Danger, Third Eye. And then their third album was, my God, I used to be able to recite these by heart. The fourth was, I think we're all buzzes on this bus. The third was, Hand Me That Dwarf, Don't Crush the Pliers. And those last two were each nominated for Hugo Awards for special dramatic presentation. But unfortunately, like the third one came up against something called 2001 A Space Odyssey and lost to it. I don't know why. I have the unfairness of it. But if we're talking about that, and we shouldn't be, because the show, we're wasting time. Dan Persons has two things to review this morning.
And as unambiguous
and
as
there
the
he
film
is,
thank
you,
is
Dan.
That
okay.
In the summer of 1969,
let's start
a
this
sea
again.
Island,
so everybody
I'm Dan Persons,
in your head, this never happened. The theme music has just ended, and now, magically, we hear...
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The conceit of the new comedy Moonwalkers is that, in the summer of 1969, a CIA operative played by Ron Perlman...
That's last week's! I was using that for experimentation. Try this one now.
For Hour of the Wolf.
Ah, better.
Slam Dance, this past weekend, saw the debut of Director's Cut, a new film written by and starring Penn Jillette of the comedy magic team of Penn and Teller. I didn't get to go to Slam Dance, by the way. I was stuck here in Philadelphia. They just sent me a screener. Still got snow, just didn't get any of the Park City cachet. Who needs it anyway? I do. Anyway, if you know Penn and Teller, you know their shtick is to deconstruct magic within the context of magic itself. They might reveal the secret of their illusions as they're doing them, or fortify an innocuous trick with an aggressive, disconcerting ambience. The same process is applied to Director's Cut, which assumes the format of a director's commentary to a crappy, direct-to-video copycat killer movie called Knocked Off. The twist here is that the director doing the commentary is not the director of Knocked Off, Adam Rifkin, who plays himself on camera and is also, not coincidentally, the director of Director's Cut, but one Herbert Blount, played by Gillette, a crowdfunder who shelled out enough bucks for an executive producer credit, a speaking role during a fast food restaurant massacre, and the opportunity to document the production with his own camera. That last perk is an unfortunate one, since Blount is also a dangerously obsessive fan of the film's star, Missy Pyle, who plays an FBI agent within the context of the movie within the movie, and plays herself when she's off camera. And when Blount perceives the actress is being dissed on set and not given her due on screen, he decides to take matters into his own hands. Step one, kidnap Missy to his own private green screen studio. So what Director's Cut turns out to be is a concatenation of diverse footage. The supposedly commercial release of Knocked Off, Blount's on-set footage, which he redubs not at all convincingly, to fit his own twisted conception of the film, his green screen restagings that feature him playing against Missy as her new partner and romantic interest, as well as some extra special hidden camera footage from the actress's hotel room, just to up the creep factor. And yeah, as the film progresses, it gets hella creepy. Credit has to go to Missy Pyle for playing a terrified, involuntary cast member of Blount's masturbatory revision while she's daubed in the psychopath's notion of glamour makeup, which makes her look like nothing so much as a kabuki clown. Penn Jillette is not exactly a close friend of nuance, and director Adam Rifkin, whose previous credits include the quasi-Lynchian fantasy The Dark Backward and the raunchy teen comedy Detroit Rock City, both of which I have a fondness for, by the way, is a pretty good match to his star in temperament. Rifkin actually pulls off the various format shifts quite handily, with Knocked Off actually a pretty decent send-up of the shallow visual posturing endemic to direct-to-video releases, although the director does stage a genuinely impressive fast food massacre, far better than these things usually get. I do wish the film didn't tip its hand from frame one. A bit of subtlety would have helped with the satire and better sold the film's oddball format. But you do get walk-ons by the likes of Gilbert Gottfried and Ron Jeremy, and Teller, Gillette's typically mute partner, talks in this one, and has one of the funnier sequences to boot. Director's Cut is fun in a cringe-worthy way, even if it is kind of a missed opportunity in not being more accurate in taking down the typical director's commentary. In other news, it's been announced that starting January 29th, nominees for all Oscar short film categories will be released theatrically. And if you can get yourself to a screening of the animated shorts, you really need to. I finally got to see all of them, and it is a stunningly strong slate this year. So strong that the traditional Pixar candidate Sanjay's Super Team, about a young boy who fantasizes joining forces with a clutch of Hindu deities to fight crime, is the lesser of the entries. It's still pretty charming and actually better than the other Pixar short this year, Lava. And yes, I say that remembering that I got all gooey over that one. As for the other nominees, what do you want to be impressed by? The Russian film We Can't Live Without Cosmos uses clean 2D animation to tell the story of two cosmonauts whose partnership is undone by tragedy. And the fact that what's depicted is clearly a loving relationship between two men, albeit a chaste one, coming out of Putin's Russia gives the film an impact that goes beyond its sweet poignancy. The Chilean CG-animated film Bear Story has an ursine busker using a miniature clockwork stage to tell the tale of how he was separated from his family and imprisoned in a circus, with the intricate mechanics and a beautiful background track delivering a powerful emotional impact. Prologue is essentially an animated manifesto from proficient director Richard Williams, he of Roger Rabbit and Princess and the Cobbler fame, whose brutal depiction of hand-to-hand combat between Greek warriors essentially says, "Bleep you and your computers, here's what I can do with pencil and paper." And as I mentioned last week, Don Hertzfeldt's World of Tomorrow is also a nominee, the longest of the lot, actually. Lee, and the only one with dialogue, and in its tale of a young girl receiving a message from the future from her own clone, covers a feature film's worth of ground, sometimes sad, sometimes funny, sometimes grim, all done with Hertzfeldt's analog in-camera visual effects and his ability to wring out surprisingly convincing performances from stick figures. There's such good stuff here that I don't even want to conjecture on which one is going to take the gold. They're all deserving in their own individual ways. Usually, you're all winners is the hoariest of award show cliches, but in this case, it's actually true. That's fantastic. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website, so check out what you missed by going to mightymoviepodcast.com.
And thank you, Dan. So, I have a couple of comments. Usually I don't bother to see all of the movies that are reviewed, but when it comes to the Oscar animated shorts, there's no keeping me away. And through Dan, I was able to get through to the PR people on that, and I have seen them. It opens at the IFC Center in New York on Friday, and it's better, by the way, to go there and see it, because when they do their annual presentation, it's always fun. They have the winner of the previous year's short. That browser isn't working, so we're going to have to figure something out. The previous year's short introduces each other short and talk a little about it. I saw them out of sequence five that I saw, which were the Oscar nominees. I loved three. Dan loved five. I did not think that the Pixar one was that one. What's the title? Sanjay's Superheroes, something along those lines, was excellent. The Don Hertzenfeldt 16-minute short was wonderful, and there was another there. Two of them just left me cold. And at the collection that they show in the theater at the IFC Movie Center, I call it the Waverly, but you have to be old enough to know what I'm referring to, you will also see runners-up sort of honorable mentions. And there have been years in which I thought the short that should have won the Academy Award wasn't even nominated. It's, you know, talk about your snubs. They certainly snubbed those. So what can I say? Everybody has their opinions. One way or the other, I concur with Dan. You should go see the animated shorts from the Oscars. It's a wonderful show and opens this Friday, and see if your picks are similar to mine. On a future program, now next month we're going into fun drive time, and I'm actually going to be on from midnight to 3, and the theme is going to be audiobooks. And we're sort of leading into that this week, because our theme this morning is going to be podcasts. So they're very much the same thing. The difference is the length. What Kaleidocast does is shorter than the audiobook version of Dahlgren that's coming out next month. Don't know why, it just sort of worked out that way. If you don't know what Dahlgren is, you have a wonderful and strange experience ahead of you. It's a 50-year-old novel that holds up today as one of the great pieces of literature. Terrence Taylor, frequent guest on this program and tech director for the reading series I do, actually had never read the book on his way up to Reader on the train. This is unbelievable. We're talking about an 860-page difficult novel, and he read it en route. And then we had a panel. I was on the panel of Dahlgren at 50 And just to make you totally, totally nervous, sitting in the front row is Chip Delaney, excuse me, Samuel R. Delaney, stroking his beard in a way that is the professorial Delaney at work, listening to us critique his greatest work. Well, Chip, I think it's your greatest work. And all that. And Terrence got up and he did this speech. And at a certain point, he jumped into the air in ecstasy, crying. It's on YouTube. Go to YouTube, look up ReaderCon Dahlgren and take a look at it. The sound is for bleep. On our number one. The sound is for number one, but I don't give a number three. It's really worth going to YouTube to see. You guys are getting the idea, right? Okay. I don't even know how I got into that rap. I have an announcement to make, and then we're going to get on with the show. Without benefit of audio of what it is we're going to be talking about, unfortunately, because the drive I was given was formatted for a Mac, and we're a PC house. We emailed you link, but if that doesn't matter. If this isn't reaching the internet, a link doesn't matter. The browser isn't online.
If the browser isn't online, then the link sheet don't work. It doesn't matter. Well, that's an unfortunate state of affairs. It is. So, but before we get to talking about Collidecast, which, by the way, you know, hey, it's a podcast. You can hear it. You can go to it. It's collidecast.nyc. We'll teach you how to spell Collidocast. We'll teach me first how to say it. Then we'll teach you how to spell it so you can find it in your browser. And you can enjoy it on your favorite listening device. Not a phonograph, but otherwise. Next. Oh, okay. What month is going to be next? Somebody like that. Yellow. Yes, I need to get online. Yes, no, I'm on computer too, but the browser isn't bringing up any websites. Oh, yeah, that could be, but I'm live on the air, so. But it's a great idea, Max. Thank you. You saw, by the way, that Jack Flanders, the voice of Jack Flanders, passed on. Yeah, from the fourth tower of Inverness. Next to Fireside Theater, the second best radio drama, ZBS Productions. Indeed. Well, thanks, Max. Take care. Bye-bye. You know, Max had great ideas. Basically, I could go into another room, reboot the router, and do all that kind of stuff. Not while I'm live on the air, but otherwise, good idea. Okay, this coming Tuesday, that is to say Groundhog Day. That is to say Groundhog Day. That is to say this coming Tuesday, February 2nd, at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which is the first floor of the same building in which we are, well, trying to broadcast from, 388 Atlantic Avenue between Bond and Hoyt. We have our monthly reading, and we have two favorites, Richard Bose and Barbara Krasnoff. And yes, Barbara is, like, affiliated with me and all that. However, I always like to point out that before I was curator or anything like that, two previous curators chose her to be a reader. So just because I am now the curator doesn't mean that I can't book her. So there. Barbara Krasnoff has sold over 30 pieces of short fiction to a...
Apologies include... Well, there's a long, long list, but I will mention Clockwork, and now she's in Clockwork Phoenix 5, along with one of our guests this morning, a Mr. Cameron. So we'll be talking about that in a while. And he's going to be reading on April 5th, when we do the Clockwork Phoenix 5 launch, as part of the reading series. The editor, Mike Allen, is coming up from wherever it is that he lives. It's, if it's outside of New York City, it's someplace else. And Barbara's a darn good writer is all I can say. Read her fiction and find out. You go to brooklynwriter.com and there are links to any number of her pieces of fiction there. Yes, we've been online, she and I, long enough. We met online in 1981. She's been online long enough that we got good URLs. I have ourwolf.com. She is brooklynwriter.com. Okay, so that's Barbara. Then Rick Bose, Richard Bose. I call him sort of my Billy Crystal. As you know, David Letterman starts or ends a show in his career, moves from NBC to CBS, whatever. his main guest was always Billy Crystal. I do something, I get Rick Bowes here because he's wonderful and he's a great writer and wonderful reader and spiffy human being and all around fabulous, strange person. And he writes great fiction, let me tell you. And he will be the other reader. He has published 6 novels, 4 story collections, pardon me, and over 80 short stories. He's won 2 World Fantasy Awards, a Lambda Award, which is basically sort of like the gay science fiction award. Or is that the happy science fiction? Maybe it's both. A StorySouth Million Writers Award, which I helped stuff the ballot box for, because we actually, it was the first time that we ever mentioned it on the air. And Rick Bowes, he's scheduled to be on a Kaleidocast? Good. We'll talk about that shortly. His most recent novel, Dust Devil on a Quiet Street, was on the 2014 World Fantasy and Lambda shortlists. Let me tell you something. Rick has won many of these awards, but never when he attends. So, Rick, if you want to win a World Fantasy Award, stay in New York. We'll have dinner. That, you know, that's basically it. Come to my house and watch movies and stuff. A new edition. Oh, yes. A new edition of his novel from 2005, From the Files of the Time Rangers, which was a Nebula-nominated novel, will appear later this year from Lethe Press. And last year, his 9/11 story, There's a Hole in the City, got a very nice review in The New Yorker, and the audio version of There's a Hole in the City is great, said the producer. So, no, it's good. It's real good. Rick did a wonderful reading, and it's worth hearing. And we offer it almost every year here on WBAI, so... recent forthcoming appearances include Fantasy Magazine's Queers Destroy Fantasy special issue, Nightmare Magazine. Now, these are both places that have podcasts that I get to edit. And the anthologies, The Doll Collection and Black Feathers. Black Feathers, I don't know. The Doll Collection is Datlow, so, you know, yeah. Going to be a good book. He is currently writing stories that will be chapters in a novel about life as a gay kid in 1950s Boston. Have you been listening to this show in the last year? You've heard 3 of them. Okay. So that's this coming Tuesday. Starts at 7 o'clock. Show up early because there's a lovely cafe downstairs with all kinds of coffee and num-nums and beer and organic wine and kombucha, which is not a part of Russia. It's a beverage. And you get to meet very cool people. And admission is free, but we will hawk you for donations because I have to pay for the space downstairs. WBAI doesn't pay. It's not a WBAI event. This is a me event. So don't make me pay for it. Just help donate when you come in. February 2nd, 388 Atlantic Avenue. Look it up on Facebook or at ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF. Okay. Well, I was hoping that would take 15 minutes. That took half an hour, which means that it's time for me to do technically a break, saying that this is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org, org, just feels like ARG. And with me this morning are 3 folk that represent the core of Kaleidocast, which is a new podcast. And why don't you each introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about who you are and how you relate to Kaleidocast. You can go in, yeah, from circular order. Everybody watching on your radio can figure out.
Yeah, I tagged Sam first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My name is Sam Schreiber. I'm one of the co-editors of the Kaleidocast, and I also am a writer of short fiction and have stories that are either in or forthcoming in the Doonstief Audio Fiction magazine, Journey Into, Podcastle, and most recently, Analog Science Fiction and Fact.
Ooh, an analog sale. Hello. La-di-da.
Golf clap.
Yeah, really.
My name's Cameron Roberson. I am also a co-producer and editor and all the stuff that goes into doing excellent podcast.
I'm afraid you and Stanley are going to have to like lean into that mic. You're doing fine now.
Yeah? But, how about now? Check, please. And
here it is. It's cheap.
Cost however much that beer was, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I'm also a writer, and my first published sale is coming out in Clockwork Phoenix 5. I'll say it again, Clockwork Phoenix 5.
Richie, of great stories, actually, edited by Mike Allen. And it's prestige, let me tell you. Oh, my God, I got it online. I don't know how, but we have it, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
That could be good news for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Bradley Robert Parks. I am the founder of the Brooklyn Speculative Fiction Writers, who sort of brainstormed this podcast, the Kaleidocast. I'm also a writer. I have fiction on buzzymag.com and also a story in episode 3 of the Kaleidocast. So we are all producers, editors, hosts, do-it-yourself podcasters who've been at this for a while.
Yeah, I think Sam was joking.
Now you see, you gotta find a microphone to talk.
Oh, 45-degree angle. Okay.
No, so, it doesn't have to be, but just get close to the mic. Okay.
I was just going to say that Sam and I, we all together, our combined sales make up
SFWA. That the three of us each have one professional sale, which, I guess if we wanted to, we could all collectively apply to be the
To be a member of the Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America, you have to have three sales of short work or one of long work in the past 10 years. So, by the way,
10 years. We got time.
Is it 10? I'm just saying that because of the current furor over the Academy Awards, where they're telling people, you know, if you haven't done anything in 10 years, you can't vote for the Academy so that they can bring in new blood. And, but, you know, I'm sorry, folks, but makes sense to me, except for script writers. Script writers can apply for 10 years, then write something that wins an Academy Award and not be able to sell something for the next 20 years and then have another hit. So, but with actors, yeah, you ought to have like one movie every 10 years, even a short appearance, and that'll keep your Academy MM anyway.
Well, it actually brings up a good point. I mean, part of the great fiction and Brooklyn speculative fiction writers has tons of great writers out there or in there. We wanted to find a way to give them a venue.
Well, if you don't mind, let's dial back a little bit and talk a little bit more, Brad, about the Brooklyn speculative fiction writers and what that entails. Because I've noticed that you've got people from, like, you know what I'm saying, outside the borough. Occasionally, you know, and there are people within the borough who say, hey, this poison isn't from Flatbush.
That, I think I'd have to attribute that to a failure of imagination on my part.
Oh, dear.
Yes. When I founded the group, I just kind of grasped for what was closest to me. And since I live in the middle of Brooklyn, that's Brooklyn. So in 2010, set the Wayback Machine, I was looking for a writing group, reached out to meetup.com, where a lot of aspiring writers go for there, and actually a lot of people with just general interests. It's a fantastic place for people who want to get together to do things that they're commonly interested in, but found that all of the writers' groups on there were either not speculative fiction focused, and I attended a few, and it amounted to a few very amusing critiques of people who had no idea what they were
what
reading.
What specfic was.
Yeah, it was cute. But
no.
Okay, not quite.
This is big stuff nowadays.
So exactly.
We're not in the ghetto anymore.
No, not at all. But back in all of the speculative fiction writing groups on Meetup were in the process of fading or met on nights when I couldn't go to a meeting. So I figured, oh, what the heck, I'll start one. And it took off like I could not have even possibly predicted, to the point that, well, we're almost 6 years in, 5.5 years in. Even after a couple of list cullings, we have 270 members.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
I mean, your average writer's group is about a dozen people.
Exactly. And our doors are wide open. So that's one of the great things about the group that has surprised me.
And near the end of the show, we'll be telling everybody how they can partake.
Oh, of course. Nice. Absolutely. In so many different ways. So to date, we've had 340 meetups. We meet on the average of between 8 to 10 times a month. We have novel critique groups. We have short story critique groups. We have sort of a short form brainstorming workshop where you can just bring your ideas or your short fiction and talk about it. We have a book discussion group where we sort of take apart the prose. We can become better tickers ourselves.
Okay. And from the Brooklyn Speculative Fiction, is it Writers Group? What's the
Writers.
Proper name?
Yep, Brooklyn,
okay, so
BSFW.
BSFWA.
Well, not even A.
Just BSFW.
Brooklyn Speculative Fiction Writers of America?
How do you say
that? Oh, I like that. It sounds very official.
Or Amherst, yeah. I'm just trying to...
Since 1850.
BSFW.
Yep.
I'm trying to say, how do you say that?
Just say BSF Writers.
It's difficult enough for the New York Review of Science Fiction where we say NYRSF.
That's a fun word to say. NYRSF.
It is.
Have you tried to say BSFW or
science?
Yeah, we...
BSFW. No, doesn't quite work.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Yeah, okay.
But bsfwriters.com will get you to our public-facing website.
Okay.
Meetup.com and a search for speculative fiction or Brooklyn Speculative Fiction Writers will get you to the actual meetup group where we organize all of our activities. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Mm-hmm. We have a Pinterest page. Because, you know, it's all necessary.
Okay, very good. But not LinkedIn yet. Or
not LinkedIn, no. Until we become professionals.
You know, the thing about LinkedIn is you can laugh at all you want, but if you look at the skills you can add on LinkedIn, some of them get kind of crazy. You can do power healing. You can do anti-submarine warfare. To the point that I'm kind of disappointed that no one has turned LinkedIn into kind of an RPG platform. It seems like it is such a perfect fit.
I think Chuck Gannon has thought of it, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm curious about that power healing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The crystal healing is a skill you can have on LinkedIn.
I imagine something like Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah. But also hand-to-hand combat. Just a whole plethora of really kind of...
Well, it's essentially a skill sharing and job hunting site. So you list the things one can do. So from this... From the Brooklyn SFW came Kaleidocast, and it is therefore it takes place in a Brooklyn, not necessarily the Brooklyn.
We call it our Meta Brooklyn. It's another dimension layered on top of our Brooklyn, where all the stories from our authors, they kind of percolate and they rise up into this Brooklyn in many different shapes and forms. It could be in the shape of a crocodile, as of like this month. It could be the shape of a magical orb. It could be in the shape of a lizard on the side of a wall in a coffee shop in Park Slope. And it takes so many different forms in our Brooklyn. And our characters, are constantly out there trying to hunt these stories down and classify them, just try to figure out what is this Kaleidocast and where is it coming from.
Mm-hmm. One of the ideas we've been playing with is the notion that all these short speculative fiction stories are literary fiction in whatever universe they come from. That there's some world where the rules in these stories are just the rules of reality, and that this kind of a multiverse view of Brooklyn, that there's a an infinite number of Brooklyns, and they all have stories, and they all wind up in this Brooklyn, and that's where we find them.
Okay, very good. And if one goes to kaleidocast.nyc, and that's K-A-D-O-C-A-S-T, so for the, you know. By the way, the I before E, except after E rule, that's nonsense. More words have E before I. But it's a lie. Everything you know is wrong. It's a lie. It's Kaleidocast is E-I, kaleidocast.nyc. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Precisely.
And that will take you to the Kaleidocast website, where you can choose the neighborhood of which episode you want to listen to, and there's one a week.
One every 2 weeks, actually.
One every 2 weeks, every fortnight. Yes. So one every fortnight. And I like fortnights. What can I say? And or one can subscribe via one's preferred pod listener, be that iTunes or Stitcher or which is one I'm
SoundCloud. SoundCloud.
SoundCloud isn't exactly a podcast listener. It's actually a platform for sound, and you can subscribe to different things that are up there, but it's not actually – you can use it, but it's not actually a podcast program. It's a sound platform. It's great. Mixcloud is interesting as well. And but for most podcasts, Stitcher – mm-hmm. or iTunes or Podkicker or one of those, because there you can just go in. For SoundCloud, you have to be on SoundCloud for it to work. These other ones that I mentioned, you just type in the name. Except with Kaleidocast, I discovered that you have on at least Podkicker, you have to choose iTunes, and then you can find it. If you do a general search, it will not turn up.
We will be rectifying that.
Exactly. Yes. We'll figure it all out eventually.
It's easily done, I'm sure.
Exactly. It only took us 2 years to get this far. So,
well, your startups are, you know.
It's funny. I was emailing with one of our authors from episode 2, Amal El-Motar, and she sent me her bio, and it said she lives with her cats and her fiancé. And I actually wrote back to her and said, you know, just so we know, when are you getting married? Because actually a friend of mine had this happen to her on Podcastle, as they told the listeners that she had a fiance when at that point she had a husband. And Amal was like, oh, don't even worry about it. This at the bare minimum a year and a half from now. So anyway, I wound up re-recording her bio to upgrade the fiancé to husband. That was a few weeks ago.
Congratulations again.
Exactly. Congratulations to
Little
them all.
Little did she know.
Yeah, and Stu. This has been a long process for us.
And in today's society, do not ask either anybody named Delia or Kushner who their husband is. Just don't do that. It's spouse. The word is spouse.
Duly noted.
Yeah. I have too many married friends who don't have husbands and some who don't have wives. So.
Very true.
Or that there are husbands and wives, but not to each other. Hmm. So. Well, we once did a family evening where we had two men who were married and two women who were married. And, you know, so I said that we had, you know, two husbands and two wives, but no husbands and wife couples, that's all. And
there was a nursery rhyme like that, isn't there?
I swear. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Say Ives and his wives, is that it?
Ives and his wives. Charles Ives? Or? No, that goes back to we were having...
Bert Ives.
Ah, Burl Ives, even better. At a folk singer versus a classical music of Currier and Ives. He actually was Charles Ives. The composer was the son of the Ives, as in the Currier and Ives calendars. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm just ahead of useless knowledge, which is why I have a radio show. So yeah, I actually got this sucker working.
Oh, awesome.
And hopefully I can get it on the air. So what should I be choosing here? What neighborhood should I go to?
I think if you can just jump right into episode one. Yeah. It's a fun primary conceit is.
I think it's going
to
be this one.
That's the one I was about to try to bring up. I see it's trying to bring up SoundCloud.
Yes.
But because these are just links to SoundCloud. Well, let's give it a whirl. I'm afraid that's exactly what it's doing. It's whirling.
Whirling, yes. Yeah. Well, we'll provide entertaining Phil in the meantime.
Yeah. And here comes Phil now,
yeah,
as a matter
exactly.
of fact. Yeah,
exactly.
2 and 3 are like all set, but 1 and 4 are not. Okay. It just does this, but see if I go here, I've got it.
You get the full feel. You get all the main characters in there all at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. It would be best if we could.
Number four might not be terrible.
Well, I can get number three. Is it all going from east to west?
Oh no!
It just happens to be where
it happens.
Okay, because I don't know which is 3 and which is 4.
Go to the SoundCloud, then, the website.
Oh, that's a good idea. Why don't we just try that, see if that works? Yeah. SoundCloud.
Yeah, but while you're looking, you know, a lot of our... So our mics and me don't mix. Okay, so for most episodes have two stories. And what we tried to do was to... get a story that, for example, like Amal Al-Muhtar's story, which is beautiful.
She's a great writer.
And everyone
good actually, singer, too.
I know. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of knows her already. She's a known name. And then put her, kind of pair her with another story from somebody in our group who's also very, very good. The whole goal, really, of the Kaleidocast was to get our readers to read at a certain level, to write at a professional level. And so for the 200-plus people who are in our group, we said, okay, we have a panel of 5 professional writers in our group. If you can get 3 of those 5 to say, yes, this is a very good story, this is a professional-level story, you are podcasted, you are published.
And you know, we take it seriously. The first story I submitted to the Kaleidocast was not accepted. I won't lie, that stung a little. But.
now, who is...
You have to cut somebody's pay, right?
Who is making these editorial choices of what stories are selected or not?
There is the 3 of us, but we also have other writers. Ted Rabinowitz, Cheryl Staszynski.
Marcy Arlen. Mm-hmm. Marcy Arlen. So this, again, it's like, for me, actually, me personally, I am not one of the panelists because my hands are just... too much into the Google Drive and figuring out what goes where and who is being.
And we all
know what we would do without Cam as organizational guru. He is a cruel, kind taskmaster. By interns.
Yes.
Cracking the whip whenever it needs to be cracked.
Not going there.
He's still my virgin ears. Don't
that
say
that
it.
Was not, not on going the list there, of yeah. forbidden words.
No, it's not a forbidden word. It's just a concept that even at 2:20 a.m., most people, we do have certain listeners, but most people don't want to know about, you know.
Not really, no.
My ears. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Personal lives notwithstanding.
Yeah. Okay, what's happening here, by the way, it's quite clear, is that our internet connection is intermittent.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And so I could get to the SoundCloud homepage, but then I can't search on it. So
that's magical.
It's mm-hmm. mystical is what it is. So I was able to get to SoundCloud. It was able to find me the search on Kaleidocast. Ooh, now it just came up.
Woohoo! Awesome. Then just going to go to episode, scroll down.
Yeah, well, but it's not listing. Oh, okay. Well, I'm at all. Ah, here we go. Thank you. In reverse order. Purgatory?
That's yep. it.
Is that the one of choice? Why don't we not take a chance? You want to play the teaser, right? You want to go straight into Purgatory?
Yeah, as it were? Episode one. Purgatory. Yep.
Okay, very good. So y'all turn Wittershins at home and make sure that this is going to work, right? Please. The wheels are spinning, but the Kaleido isn't casting yet. It's weird because it says most popular tracks were F.F. White, but it's not actually playing it.
Such a tease, this computer.
No, it's a travesty. It's WBAI. But no, we're having growth issues. We've only been in this space for a few months now, broadcasting. This was admin offices. We have not yet built our studios, and we're probably a year or two away from having that happen. We've raised the money, I believe, and we're going to start raising money again as of February 1st. We're in yet another fundraising drive. Ooh. Well,
that's cool. And we can talk a bit more about the process here. I mean,
yeah, and actually, I may have just discovered a way around this problem. Maybe. Okay, I thought I could download it. But no, it stopped after 5 megs. And that's what's going on, is that we have this intermittent internet here. So
we'll make sure. I mean, like, so just talking about this, like, talking about the process.
You are allergic to that mic.
I am. You know, it's looking at me funny. We're out in the alley tomorrow night. We're gonna have a fight. But one of the cool things actually is for our writers is when we see someone bring a story to one of the short story critique sessions, and it's not quite right yet, but then they take it through its paces, and then they come back, they bring it back, and they submit, and we say, now this is, you know, we see that the critique process works. That having sitting around with other writers who have all these different levels of experience and all these different kinds of perspectives are able to, between 7-8 people, 3-4 minutes each, give the writer what they need to take their story to the next level.
Yeah, that was one of the most startling things that happened when I started this writing group. You know, I've been in writing groups before from college on forward. And, you know, I expected kind of the low to average beginning writer, and we have really all levels of writers, but the level of talent is astonishing. And I don't know if it's, you know, the fact that we're in New York City, we're in Publishing Central. It really does. But people were just kind of starving for this process and this audience and the ability to get together with their peers and, you know, nerd out in the way that we love to do.
Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say it's really testament to Brad and Cam's dedication to the group that we've become, I think, this kind of beacon to a lot of writers. That we may have gotten lucky early on with some people, but I think now understand that this is the place to go if you are looking for good feedback, if you're looking for consistency, if you're looking, I mean, frankly, we have people in our group have published and sold stories that have been through our critique process in rates that I think are just astonishing.
Yeah, like there's Evan who's going to submit for us last year. Shan Chakraborty, or S. Chakraborty, as she is, as her nom de plume is on from the Kaleidocast. Like the story that she submitted, Beladi, is one of my favorite stories that I've read from the group ever. So it's actually a real pleasure to actually get a chance to connect her with my friend Laura, who is an actress who's been all over the United States. She's been Lincoln Center, all over the place. And to get these two people together and to create something new, that's, you know, it's just, you have to listen to it yourself. I mean, it's a work of art. And we get people like her and Forrest F. White and Marcy Arlen. And besides Marcus Song, we're going to get to him next week. That's going to be fun. But besides being great writers, they're also amazing critiquers too, particularly Marcy Arlen. And also we have other people who are not on the Kaleidocast, but they have had such an impact on the way that we write. It's phenomenal.
And we're able to put them alongside amazing talent. I mean, we talked about Rick Bowes earlier. He's going to be in episode 8.
Which story?
His Only Nose.
Which Brad is going
to
narrate.
I had the joy of narrating. It was a whole lot of fun.
Is that one of the Boston stories?
Yes, it is. And I,
that's from
God help us all, I attempted an accent of some sort. We'll let the fates decide when that actually...
with Rick.
Oh, I, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to walk away
with Rick
with
several
accent.
Times. Yeah.
You're going to walk away with the accent.
Oh, yeah.
It's very simple.
Yeah, Rick is great.
Actually,
yeah.
Rick was teasing us about making sure that we do broadcast his story before he dies.
And we're going to do it.
I'm not trying to make noise. I'm just this is me knocking.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're knocking on a table,
Rick,
with a live microphone.
Rick, you're episode 8. If you're listening to this, episode 8. You only got what, 4 more weeks?
Yeah, hang in there, Rick.
Yeah, well, Rick is reading for us, of course, on February 2nd here at 388 Atlantic Avenue. Again, be here at 7 p.m. And I would tell you that it's also live on live stream, but then you wouldn't have to show up. So I'm not going to tell you that. You have to come to 388 Atlantic Avenue and hear him read live, along with Barbara Krasnoff.
Yeah, it's a treat.
Barbara who? Krasnoff. How, appearing with Rob Cameron in Clockwork Phoenix 5. Which is going to be at NeurCiv on April 5th.
Awesome. I think we're also doing a reading at ReaderCon as well.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. If Mike Allen, if Mike isn't there, his hat will be. For those who know Mike Allen, you know what I'm talking about.
I'm pretty sure his hat already has reservations, but I talked to him.
I'm pretty sure his hat has its own room. I think.
Most of our episodes are two-parters, but some of them, our stories so large that
we split them into two parts. we're actually really proud of our season finale this year. It's a full cast production of Jonathan Lethem's The Insipid Profession of Jonathan Hornbaum, which for probably a lot of your listeners, yes, it is an homage to the Heinlein story, The Unpleasant Profession.
The profession of Jonathan Hoag.
Exactly right.
A wonderful story. Yeah. I haven't read the Lethem version of it, but Lethem, he moved west.
To Pomona, yes. I was disappointed too, but he was...
And the person who took his apartment isn't a writer.
Well, that is pretty...
We're not going there. Well, he got that apartment from a writer. And that person got that apartment from the writer. This is, well, I shouldn't say where, but it's in the Slope, sort of on the border of the Slope and Windsor Terrace. Mm-hmm. And
Google Map it.
Well,
promise not to tell.
That'll give people a wide area and close enough.
What I was going to say is the production as well as the author is something that we just are super proud of. We're going to have music by Josiah Woodson, Grammy Award-winning Josiah Woodson, who's going to be playing trumpet, guitar, flute, and a number of other instruments on the cast. And a lot of really great actors, half of which I think we were introduced to by Cam.
My friend Michael Taylor, and Mateo Prendergast. CeCe James, the owner of Singularity, is also coming in. She's doing, I don't want to call it a cameo, but she is lending herself to this. It was like really random. I was like, hey, CeCe, do you have time to be birds? And she didn't even question that. She's like, yes, I will be the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And body painting, but...
And Wilson Fowley is also doing a nice little guest spot in as well, escape artist Wilson Fowley, who can also be heard narrating F.F. White's Purgatory in episode 1.
Which is why I'm trying to pull up here.
Although Tatiana Gomber, I think, out of all our readers, she's the one who did the bulk of the narration. She actually plays the narrator, and she plays the main lead as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah, Tatiana, I met her when she did the... The first podcast story I ever did was Corinthians at Podcastle, and she narrated that. And she's really lucky to have her doing this for us.
Yeah, okay. We latched onto this idea of the 12-episode season as a way to sort of actually put a cap on this and get something out there in a reasonable period of time.
I was going to ask about that, because on the one hand, there's a lot to be said for the weekly installment. And on the other hand, the world today is starting to get used to the idea of binge watching. Maybe they should start binge listening.
Well, that's the beauty of podcasts. It's not unlike television viewing. If you want to binge watch, you can wait for the season to conclude, and then you can just gorge on 12 episodes of the Kaleidocast.
Maybe.
Hopefully, if we achieve whatever amounts, if we achieve whatever amounts to success in the world of podcasting, we will just launch right into season two, manageable project with beginning and stories, and go through the process of recording, assembling the episodes, and really putting the time and attention that it takes to make a great sounding podcast.
You know, and also people have day jobs. I think Brad kind of disappears into a hole. Oh. Sometimes you're working till what, 2 o'clock?
I mean him. Yeah, it happens. It's sad. But
we all do.
Yeah.
But I have the summers. I have the summers.
Rude.
Not bragging.
That's just rude.
Just stating a fact.
I sort of have the summer. In the summer, I go from 3 jobs to a leisurely 2 jobs. So.
Yeah, I just get them off.
This is WBAI. We never stop. We are always pitching. We're always begging. We're always...
None of those words are on the list.
That's true.
That's right. You can say all of those things.
And we're often saying words that are on the list, which is how we ended up in the Supreme Court to begin with.
One of the other things...
You are aware that the Carlin case is officially called Justice Department versus WBAI Radio.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't
know
that.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that the show, the radio show, that tested what we call Safe Harbor, the 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., which had a guest named Harlan... I don't
something
remember.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a person who you can count on to use 12 of the 7 words. So, but we did that right up to 6 a.m. and stopped dead cold. The story continued through to 6:15, but there weren't any of the words after that. And it never went to court because it was decided. The thing about the Carlin decision is that the First Amendment prevails, but it's a question of when children might be listening that would not understand the proper disclaimer.
So does Comedy Central pay you royalties? Because after midnight, they will air...
Well, they should, in a way.
Just broadly uncensored, anything they want.
It was the Carlin decision and the aftermath that determined it was seen by us as a problem because we had to pay for a Supreme Court case. But it was seen by journalism, by broad, because the First Amendment won, except during daylight times. For not a bad reason. It's understandable that an unattended 5-year-old would not know that when you say, the following program contains frank language, if you're offended by frank language...
Shouldn't have named your child Frank.
Yeah. Blank off. Child listening unattended at 2 a.m.
Although I'm impressed with that child who's able to get up at 2 a.m., turn on the radio, find the station, and say, oh...
The opinion of many people that there was no child to begin with. It was a particular organization with the word morality in it that brought the case against WBAI to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. But anyhow,
if that's not true, I'm more impressed by that child. That's a very litigious child.
It was allegedly the father. It was allegedly the father.
Don't take that child on a New York City subway at any hour of any day.
No. Well, you see, that's the other part of the Carlin decision, something we call community standards.
Uh-huh.
Yes, because what And this is now problematic. In them days, WBAI was simply a 50-mile radius of New York City, and there was no internet to carry it around the world, and there was no internet archive to listen to a program after it had been on. So it was all transitory, very important. We are a transitory medium. In them, their days, once the broadcast had finished, it was done with, gone, and all that. The nature has changed today because once broadcast, available basically forever, even if it leaves our server, you can go to like archive.com or archive.org. Thingies.
Sadly, almost nothing is transitory anymore.
Yeah.
Except maybe Snapchat.
It's
and there are ways of getting around that.
Oh yeah, take a screenshot.
Yep.
Yeah.
And your Snapchat lives forever.
I don't know why this damn thing. Occasionally it will bring me, I'm still trying to bring Kaleidocast up on the computer here, but what I'm giving up. I'm just going to tell you all at home. You go to Kalei. I'm better off when I'm not looking. Ocast.
I think you skipped a D there.
Dot. Trust me. It's Kaleiocast.
Okay, we can change your name, yeah.
It's like kaleidoscope that's been cast at somebody. Exactly. When you get really angry at somebody, you throw your kaleidoscope at them, and that's Kaleiocast. Where did the name come from?
Cam. Cam came up with it.
I think. Yep. Oh, we were sitting.
By the way, folks, don't hit the table. It makes a really loud noise on the air because it's got microphones on it.
So sorry. So I'm not sure if you remember the Vagabond Cafe down off of West 4th Street.
I do.
Loved that place. I would spend all day at that place. Well, we started kind of hanging out there. I think Tempest showed me where that was first. And we...
That would be
Bradford.
K. Tempest Bradford.
K. Yeah. Tempest Bradford.
Is there another Tempest?
There... Tempest, yeah, well, this play by...
show from the Cosby Show.
You went way back.
No, I'll go back further. There's a play.
That would be way back.
You have to remember, this is not a podcast. This is a broadcast to people who don't know what speculative fiction is and would never have heard of Tempest Bradford.
Gotcha. Well, find her on Facebook. You will be happily surprised. Mm-hmm. We were sitting around just talking about, you know, what it is that we wanted to, what we wanted to show with the Kaleidocast. And again, the thing is about showing different visions, you know, and showing different, you know, different ways of seeing the world. And then actually with Sam, we talked about creating this kind of this new Brooklyn. And it kind of becomes like a kind of like a vision I have of, you know, this place kind of shifting and changing with the stories that we're telling, like a kaleidoscope. And so that was the inspiration for the name. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as we're, you know, going through the artistic process of figuring out the meta stories and putting these stories together as we try to find out how these stories came about and what they're doing and why we're here. All this stuff, the storytelling process, all shifts like a kaleidoscope as well.
Mm-hmm. One of the podcasts I think we owe a lot to, just in terms of theme and inspiration, Brad's looking at me.
That means get closer to your mic.
Oh, I'm sorry. my mistake. Sorry.
I'm giving hand signals to people.
Is the Drabblecast, that weird stories that kind of transcend genre, not just fantasy, not just science fiction, and some stories that just don't quite fit, honestly, squarely in any genre, but attached to stories about the stories, that Norm Sherman is kind of a genius on that front. And basically every week, oftentimes, he crafts a story about how the story came about. On the Drabblecast, and
I never met a story and didn't like something like that.
And and also just the sheer ambition of his production design on that, you know, it's mind blowing. If we hit 10% of that, I think we're doing amazing.
But a lot of that I think will come from the different stories that we're picking up and that we're able to show people. Another favorite of mine is Ted Rabinowitz's Saturday Dance, which is read by Agnes Angelet. And it is, this is another really beautiful story in Haiti of well, I don't want to give it away. You know, I want you guys to go back and listen to the story. Mm-hmm. So yeah, joecast.nyc or find us on SoundCloud to hear it. But there's lots, a lot of great actors out there as well that you might not have heard of before. Eric Brito, Red Tyus Barnwell's Unfit to Eat. Am I missing anybody? Christina Yu's Day.
Christina Yu's the author, but Renee Chambliss, who is a very beloved writer and reader in the speculative podcasting world, read Christina Yu's Chinatown Museum, which is available today, along with S. Chakraborty's Baladi.
Who read Alex's Dating Kali, my sweet?
Oh my God, that is Rish Outfield of the Doonstief Audio Fiction Magazine. I think kind of an inspiration to the Kaleidocast. He and his partner, Big Anklevich, they have an amazingly hilarious rapport, both on the top and the bottom of their episodes. And Rish actually narrated a story of mine for Journey Into a couple years ago and was nice enough to do Dating Kali and really kind of hit the nail on the head with his narration.
Yeah, he has a good accent.
It's going to be fun. Oh, and yes, S. Boyd Taylor, who, again, to bring up the Drabblecast, I first listened to his fiction there. He is a genius. I cannot recommend his work on the Drabblecast highly enough. The actual name of the story is escaping me at the moment, but the story that he's given to us is The Eight of Slash, read by another...
Flash, meaning?
Flash is a story under 1,000 words.
Ah!
And it is read by the very talented Veronica Jaguer, who also is a writer and narrator from the world of podcasting. She's done a lot of work for Escape Pod, for Journey Into, for... I believe she's done Cast of Wonders, too. Yeah.
And we also have a Tim Pratt story, Crawl Space of the World.
Yes, indeed.
And found a wonderful reader, Andy Chen, who's kind of a newcomer to audio narration and lives in San Francisco and just wanted to participate. We needed readers and reached out through Facebook, through our little web of contacts, and we found some amazing people who we hope will become standards in this wonderful world of podcasting that we all love so well.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I have another friend on here now named John Hosh, who was also a puppeteer and an actor.
Which is always good for podcasting.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Perfect for radio.
Yeah. You can't see me right now, no?
It's the Radio Puppet Hour.
We've done it.
Oh, no!
We did years and years ago.
I will look that up.
Yeah, it wasn't a Joel Hodgson kind of thing, for those who know MST3K, but
which is coming back.
I know, we're so happy.
With Felicia Day.
With Felicia Day, but who else?
I don't know.
Is Hodgson involved?
Because as far as I'm, he will be one of the writers. Mm-hmm.
One of
but
the
he won't
writers.
Be. Yeah, he
designed
the front
puppets.
Man.
Those are his puppets.
Jonah Ray, I believe, is the new.
I believe
the new Joel.
Hmm. Okay.
And yeah, he'll be delightful.
So there's no
actually.
Mike?
No, I don't think so. No, yeah. Not him either.
Yeah, the legal mishigas that went on with that got very... And the thing is that we did a show slightly similar to that on BAI long before any such thing existed. Bob Fass did a program, now I'm forgetting the name of it, but it was brilliant. And I, along with a group, the Family Electric Theater, which is a comedy group named similar to the Firesign Theater, created a thing where we went midnight to 5, and we would tell people, turn on this channel. It would usually be like channel 11 or channels with bad late night movies, and we would provide the sound. We would tell people, turn the sound on your television off.
Awesome. Oh, and what a great idea.
And we would do the commercials, all the Crazy Eddie commercials. And we are convinced that this somehow helped morph into. And Bob Fass did a similar thing using the news, where you would watch the news and have the sound turned up somewhat, but you'd also have on your radio. And he and some other very off-the-wall people like Paul Krasner or The Realist and stuff would be commenting, politically commenting on the news at the time that it was going on. So this all predated MST3K by, 15 years or so. So we were very...
very progressive. All this stuff gets out in the zeitgeist, and I think it just filters down until it... kind of flashpoint.
This was also in the days when BAI was the second most listened to radio station in New York City.
Awesome.
All the best writing is stolen or stealing.
The quote is, I think, good writers borrow, but right. great writers steal outright. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Shakespeare. Romeo and Juliet is Pyramus and Thisbe, and then he used Pyramus and Thisbe again in Midsummer Night's Dream, and so on and so forth. And the rest of it is political spin.
But it takes a special kind of playwright to just openly mock the bad performances of actors in a previous production that he's done, basically. That's Midsummer's Night's Dream. The Rue players are basically Shakespeare's way of making fun of the actors in Romeo and Juliet.
Well, yes and no, because there was also a thing in which that was an era in which you could buy yourself a play, the right to have your son perform in something, and you could commission Beaumont and Fletcher for The Night of the Burning Pestle or any number of people of the Elizabethan era. And that's part of what those players, who are all merchants, one's a weaver, one's a joiner, and so on and so forth, doing their bad, bad performances. So it was also satirical of people who basically bought theater. Hmm. So
Lana Del Rey's of their time.
There you go. Hmm. There you go. Let's see if this works. Okay. Don't know yet, but what I've done is I have rebooted this bleeping computer. And, that may have worked. That may have worked. We'll find out shortly. This has promise. Let's see now. If
I may squeal.
Flip this chromium switch.
Closing doors, please.
In a Brooklyn fractured into speculative storyscapes, fantasy, horror, sci-fi, and the just plain weird come together in
The Kaleidocast.
Join Professor Brad Overstreet, Senior Junior Lecturer Sam Spellingbound, and Assistant Crypto Provost Don Fairweather Jenkins of the Metatechnic Institute, and Inquisitor James Earl King II as they explore the stories drifting in and out of your reality.
Professor Brad Overstreet and Senior Junior Lecturer Sam Spellingbound in Suite 4C, basement level, of the Fort Greene Metatechnic Institute. We're out of the office baiting story traps right now, so please leave. Brad, the steampunk space cowboy store's gotten loose in your side of the office.
Get it, before it starts spawning fanfic.
I see it. How about out?
All right. Sam, Brad, Mrs. James. If this call finds you still alive, I've got something you want. Last night at 3 a.m., I was on the yard train making my way to Seagate to collect monster stories. Some of the best ones wash up on the beach when all the stars are gone. But I fell asleep on the train, missed my transfer, and ended up under Gravesend, stuck at Bay Ridge and 95th Street. Waiting in the whispering dark on the platform for the train to turn around, I heard footsteps behind me running away down the tunnel. I turned around and nobody was there, but then I saw this story that had not been there before. It rotated slowly on the bench, polished and shining under the lamps. Soon as it stopped moving, I picked it up to get a closer look. It was uncomfortably warm, and there were strains of smoke and myth and poetry, and I saw the author's name, Forrest F. White. I'd heard this name before. I was sure I'd hear it again. Call me back. Bidding has already begun.
Purgatory by Forrest F. White. Like the sound of soft snow falling on snow, the distant echoes of shuffling feet in the dark grotto of your mind wake you. As you return to consciousness, the indistinct edges of your senses become sharp, and each is adumbrated by the searing cold that rakes at your cheeks and extremities.
All righty, so finally, after great breastfeeding and computer beating and beating up all kinds of technology, we got to hear some of Kaleido connections.
Beating up on Max.
Exactly.
I just don't go near them. You at home, you can do the same by going to kaleidocast.nyc or look it up with your favorite podcast software. Listen every fortnight for a new episode. Because believe it or not, we have about 5 minutes left.
Yes, we missed a couple more people who we wanted to make sure that you knew their names.
The voice, my wife, Kim Rogers, and she also reads a story for that first episode by Cassie Alexander, who we are very lucky to have. She is the author of the Edie Spence series. And, also Julie Hoverson of 19 Nocturne Boulevard, another very awesome podcast, does the reading for a mall story, Wing, which first appeared in Strange Horizons. And actually, we sort of double booked it with Podcastle, but the then editor, Dave Thompson, was very gracious and did not object to us doing a command performance of it.
Okay, and it is to be pointed out again, these are all original stories. Have any of these appeared in print?
Yes, actually, one of our own. Let's see. Let me go over for you the Tim Pratt story that was in his most recent collection.
Okay,
whose name is escaping me now. Bilotti, where did Bilotti first appear?
I think it was either on Cross Genres. I have to go back
In Cross Genres Magazine or one of their anthologies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, on their magazine, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, not audio.
Expanded Horizons published Tyus Barwell's story, Unfit to Eat. And Aaliyah Tyus Barwell is actually one of our own. She is a member of the BSFW.
Oh, I'm sorry. Expanded Horizons also took Bilotti.
Oh, Bilotti also appeared in Expanded Horizons. And, And of course, the Lethem novelette appeared in his collection, How We Got Insipid, which no longer available in print, but if you don't mind.
And then that's pretty much it.
Okay, by the way, a couple of notes. Yes, but Rick says the same thing about brunch. just running back a little. And thanks, Terrence. The phones don't plug in, they just distort when you do that. And on your other note, technically, I actually started Dahlgren on the train and finished it that night in the room in the afternoon panel up until a half hour before I walked into the panel. But he still read it in under 24 hours.
I'm sorry,
hours.
That is still bragging.
I have come to wound the eternal city is all I have to
that's
say.
That's a chihuahua
that.
Killer. Dahlgren will... Yeah, what? Legitimately snap a chihuahua's backbone.
It really will do that.
Oh, and the weight.
Yes. 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 You've never heard that term, Cam.
That's horrible.
I think a great Dane would have issues.
Exactly. Do not hurl that book at a dog. Just don't do it.
It's a weighty book, Chip, and another traitor. I can't believe you moved to Philly. Mm. You know, it's like you're a New Yorker.
The author of Times Square Red, Times Square Blue.
Oh, God, don't get me started on that.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Great book.
We hit every one of those words when he read part of that on my show. Let me tell you. I don't doubt it.
Having read it.
Yeah. How much he enjoyed receiving favors at certain cinemas.
I believe that's number 5
Street.
On the list.
It is. Yes, that's precisely. Yeah. That's precisely how he enjoyed all the number 5s.
Yes.
Especially those without teeth. Oh, God. Oh! That's in the book.
It is. And it really is.
What was worse is at a Murshif reading. At a Murshif reading. Chip read from Mad Men. There were these little girls in the audience.
I remember.
And they were just looking up at him, their eyes wide going, that's wonderful.
Why is the black Santa Claus saying all these horrible things?
It is time for us to move along, everybody. It is time for Burn Baby Burn Clappers with Lister. So each of you need to outro yourselves.
I'm going to donate my outro time to one of our writers, Marcus Song, who he's the other two-parter in addition to Lethem. And his story, Knowing You, Knowing Me, is read by the incomparable Jen Carter.
Yes, but by outro, I mean you have to say who you are.
And I am Sam Schreiber.
And I am Cameron Roberson. I'm just going to say that Sam's story is being read by Craig Stauffenberg.
Craig Stauffenberg, yeah.
And I'm Bradley Robert Parks, and if you want more information about Brooklyn speculative fiction writers, please go to meetup.com.
Okay. Or BS...
BSFwriters.com.
Or kaleidocast.nyc, which stands for, I don't know what it stands for. You guys can figure it out. It should be NYC. Brooklyn, but hey, why couldn't we
that
say?
That wasn't available.
Fourth largest city in the world be Brooklyn. Now that WBAI has joined it, we're all contained. February 2nd, be here for Rick Bowes and Barbara Krasnoff at 388 Atlantic Avenue, 7 p.m. Admission free, but we'll cajole you for money anyway. Listen to Kaleidocast. This is not the last you have heard of these people on the radio or the internet. So, stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers with Lister coming your way in just whenever he walks into this room. Have a good morning, and please, everybody, be good to each other.
in prison, cause I'm busy attacking the flag. I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds, cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy, so just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn. Let's find the people who hate this shit. These are the places we'll hit.
Number one, Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, and forget Korea, Beirut, and forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talking about uptown Harlem, New York City, y'all, and Nicaragua, east and south central LA, California, IA, Miami, do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville, boogie down South Bronx, yeah.
My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag.
Number one.
That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangle. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home. Land the free, boom, this is the home of the slave. Now hold on just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I torch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn it.
Porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight. Porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight. Porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight. Porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Cariño, ven esta noche, me siento tan solo. Hace frío y mi alma vacila sin consuelo. La policía por la calle pasa despacio, acechando toda clase de elemento. Cierra la cortina, túmbate a mi lado y juntos esperemos el final del mundo. Crece la paranoia, soldados en patrulla. Tiembla Babilonia, que esta noche es mía.
Si hemos de morir, yo quiero que sea esta noche en tus brazos. Yo no me asustaré. Si hemos de morir, yo quiero que sea esta noche. Abrázame con tu contigo yo me quemaré. Contigo yo no moriré, porque contigo yo renaceré.
Escucha lo que te viene diciendo el sargento, mami.
Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay,
Babilón quiere matarme porque soy diferente. Tú quieres humillarme porque soy diferente. Siempre persiguiéndome cuando estoy con mi gente. Por eso esta noche doy el último combate. Me secuestro con mi nena y que llueva, que caigan bombas, centellas o lo que sea. Yo cierro la persiana, que nadie me toque la campana. Yo no estoy para nadie ni nada, que se queme la malla. Tengo cita en mi casa, pero no cuenten con mi persona
para morir en fila.
Yo lo que quiero es morirme en los brazos de una mujer linda.
Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, si a mí lo que me gusta es gozar, estar contigo, no ser nada especial. Lo que un ejército entero no pudo lograr, lo lograremos con nuestro eterno amar. Quédate conmigo esta noche, mamita. Tú sabes, al final el que pierde gana. Si hemos de morir, yo quiero que sea esta noche. Abrázame, contigo yo no moriré.
Y es que el sargento no quiere morirse solo, mami, y menos esta noche.
Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight. Ay, ay, no te vayas, no me dejes tonight, porque yo quiero que me ames tonight.
Ich lieg im Dreck, sink ins Meer, liegt in Tonnen. 99.
Führt wieder hierher, mal meine Wand an. Bin müde und krank, lieg flach, rotz mich in mein Grab. Geier auf dem Dach, warten auf was. Ruf mich nicht an, ich bin tot. Meine Haut grün, die Augen rot. Lad mich nicht ein in da, wo ich hingeh. Regnet es bloß, die Wand ist lang und zu hoch. 99. Der Graben tief und zu groß, doch irgendwo aus dem Nichts ein Blick, für den es sich lohnt.
99 Sink, a list of life, 10 minutes after flat burning time. Burn, baby, burn, will be burning. Furious red, white and blue to ashes. And you know why. We have to call the show. Burn, baby, burn. Welcome, Germany.
me gaze and stand up and raise my thumb. She's a loaded gun. Cool me down for my brain is gone. If no savior come, I'm gonna burn my hand. Some guys wanna spy out and tell a